everyone, and welcome to minute 159 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back to the show for yet another episode this season, Alan.
Thanks a lot, Rob, and it's been great hanging out with you. And hey, by the way, congratulations. 8 seasons. You're just about done with your 8th season. That's a lot. And so well done, sir.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to doing seasons 9, 10, 11, 12. You know, the plan is to keep going. So I appreciate that. Yes, 8 was a milestone, but you know, now 9 will now be the new milestone. You know, I keep raising the bar a little bit. But thank you. I do appreciate you giving me that support that I need. We all need that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have. All right. So minute 159 begins with Marshall giving credit where credit is due, and ends with Old Man Ryan kneeling down. So we ended things yesterday with a shot of young Ryan. And the camera was zooming in on him. You know, we get to see Matt Damon's face as he's looking down. And we will still get to hear in the background the narration that we've been listening to for the last minute and a half. And basically it's capped with Abraham Lincoln. And then it follows with yours very sincerely and respectfully, George C. Marshall, General, Chief of Staff. So, you know, we basically now get to know that the entire quote of everything that we discussed yesterday and the day before was all from Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no, sorry. The end part that he quoted yesterday,
the back half,
is Abraham Lincoln. The rest is Marshall himself, you know, which is really cool. I mean, we went down a really long, a deep rabbit hole back in, it must have been the episodes in the 30s. So we're talking 130 episodes ago where we talked about the actual Bixby letter, about whether it was real or not and stuff like that. And apparently it was. there is a real letter. Whether everything written in the letter was eventually found out to be true or not is a different story. But, you know, because not all the brothers were actually killed.
Right.
But for the time, it made sense. And, you know, It is great how they were able to tie in. See, I love when you're watching, I guess, historical fiction that is able to tie in real history into everything, because then it you know, it makes things even more plausible, and it gives you the impression, it might be falsely, but it still gives you the impression that everything that you're watching could have happened, even though it didn't, you know, that type of thing. And I like the way that they do that here. You know, this is the way this entire movie is set up around real events with fictional characters. You know, it just gives so much plausibility to it by the way that it's doing it. And on the one hand, it keeps us a little distant because we know that it's not 100% true. But on the other hand, the realism of it all is just mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Kudos to that young director, Steven Spielberg, for taking care of this.
Yeah, what a great first outing.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, my wife loves historical fiction novels, loves reading, especially those set maybe in the time of Henry VIII or Elizabethan times, because they are fictional stories, but they're centered around real history that she knows. And then it makes that whole time come alive. And you just have a sense that you lived through it, through the fiction, even though obviously the story being told never really happened, but it's happening around real events. And mm-hmm. I think that helps all of us connect better, maybe with history, when we can have a story that reaches to us. And in this case, obviously this one reached a lot of people.
Yes. Yes. I think it also has to do with whatever events they're dealing with, because there are certain events that will speak more to a wider audience than other events,
mm-hmm.
you know, from that perspective. You know, like, I mean, you just brought the idea of Henry VIII and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know how many people nowadays would be drawn into a potentially real story that happened with Henry VIII, as opposed to falling, you know, being drawn into something like this. But then again, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, okay, well, this movie, you know, was up against Shakespeare in Love, which sort of did that also. You know, the idea was, you know, it took real events and real, you know, things that happened to Shakespeare and played around with them a little bit to give us this fun story that, you know, eventually helped Harvey Weinstein steal away an Oscar from this movie that it deserved. But whatever.
But you know what? And just kind of in movies in general, I mean, you say that, Henry VIII or anything Elizabethan. What's crazy is I have friends who recognized that when you break down Game of Thrones, the whole intrigue is really just kind of the War of the Roses in English history, just sort of put with a fantasy element around it. It's correct. Still rooted in a lot of all the backstabbing and the manners of court, as well as all of the duplicity, the interactions of the church and the kingdoms and who gets to inherit what and whose bloodline comes first. I mean, yeah, we're telling these same stories. We just kind of put some different dressing around it.
Yeah, and special effects.
that does help sometimes, too.
Yes, especially in Game of Thrones world. You need the special effects to make everything, you know, seem a little bit more plausible, I guess you could say. More fun. Yeah. All right, so the visuals on the screen, we get to see Matt Damon just looking down, looking at everything going on, trying to catch his breath, trying to take everything in, and then they do an amazing job here, considering that it's relatively early in the technology of it. He just morphs into Harrison Young, which is just great. And then we're like, wait a second. I saw that guy at the beginning of the movie. Oh, wait a second. Mm-hmm. This is the guy. This is Matt Damon. You know, this is Ryan. Oh, it's not Miller. Oh. And what's really cool is if you watch it in slow motion, you can actually see that some of the creases on Harrison Young's forehead blend in with the cut that Ryan has.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it look like, okay, maybe this is like a scar that he got or something like that. So it's just very cool the way that they did that.
I don't know how much is CG manipulated versus in the computer being able to match so many points to be able to decide, because we do things when I shoot video, we shoot in ultra high resolution, usually 6K, that gives us a lot of flexibility when we're in the editing suite to either punch in, punch out. So if we had a camera that we were trying to do, let's say the same thing where we're trying to match identical camera placement, but obviously, you know, we're weeks apart from shooting and in completely different locations. Yeah, you can take all the measurements in the world, but if you're off by even a few inches, you may not match all these data points. But when you watch the slow motion, and it's so funny you say that, I did the same thing. The eyes are where the eyes are for both actors. Mm-hmm. The mouth is where the mouth is. The nose, the wrinkles. You literally can see the younger wrinkle, even outside of the scar, but just like the top wrinkle or furrow of the brow on Matt Damon matches the same placement of the natural wrinkle of now the older version of himself. It makes that morphing so much more believable. It doesn't look like the morphing you got in, let's say, the movie Willow or something, where you're moving from animal to person or whatever. It almost looks like it's a camera fade from one to the other, not necessarily really morphing, which gives it an even more, for me, it looks like it's really the same person. Like they somehow found a Matt Damon. Like, we need everybody to send us your pictures of what you look like when you were 30, and we're going to cast you based on whether or not you look like Matt Damon.
Right. See, I always had thought that this was, makeup. That, you know, because they do that in movies too. You just make a character look older, and then you can morph them into them without a problem. You know, it is the same person, just behind a lot more makeup and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, and of course, the kind of de-aging technology we have, or aging that we have with CG today, didn't exist at this point. This was truly putting the camera and everyone as a team, making sure they map this shot. I mean, literally movement by movement. Because even if you watch where the camera, if you go back to the last minute and when it started to sweep down and kind of come below Ryan, the young Private Ryan, it kind of slows down here to allow for that transition, and then it follows the exact same curve to eventually come around. So they literally mapped moment by moment to try to make this, I guess, is well, for the effect that they wanted in editing, to make this transition that I remember in the theater, and I told you this multiple times, I was like, oh my God, that's who we've been following. We've been following Ryan, not Miller.
Correct. Yeah, no, it's done really well. So do you know what morphing technology is?
Well, as far as like conceptually, yeah, it's when you're trying to blend the pixels so that way you can go from one image to the other, but make it seem like it's happening naturally, as if you're literally like made out of plastic or something, and you're changing into something else, all like the T-1000.
Okay, so the official terminology of, or the official explanation of what morphing is. It's a special effect in motion pictures and animation that changes one image or shape into another through a seamless transition. Traditionally, mm-hmm. such a depiction would be achieved through dissolving techniques on film, but since the early 90s, this has been replaced by computer software to create more realistic transitions. A similar method is applied to audio recordings, for example, by changing voices or vocal lines, stuff like that. So again, in early movie technology, they were able to, use quote-unquote movie magic in order to make it look like stuff was morphing, but they weren't doing it the same way that they did it here. This one is based on different computer algorithms and stuff like that. Now, do you know where the one of the very first morphing technology on film was from a commercial in 1986?
Oh, now that you say that, hold on. From a commercial.
Yes.
Tell us, what was the product?
So it was a commercial from Tide.
Really?
Where they morphed the detergent bottle into the shape of the U.S.
Oh, okay. I didn't think that. All right, so I didn't know this.
Okay. And then in the first movie that they used this same technique during that same year, in the movie Flood of the Navigator. So it was 1986, where they were able to make a spaceship change shape and stuff like that. Following that, the next movie that used it was The Golden Child, which had early digital morphing effects from animal to human and back. That terrible Eddie Murphy movie from 1986. then the next one that dealt with a lot of morphing was a movie that you mentioned earlier, Willow,
mm-hmm.
Where they were able to have a person changing into different animals. And then a year later, they used a similar process in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when Donovan eventually, demorphs into a skeleton after treating poorly. And at this point, the leaders of this were ILM. They were definitely the front runners to the whole thing. Then it started becoming even more popular in 1991, and Michael Jackson used it in a music video.
I was just about to say Black or White. Black, I remember that. It was exactly. Just amazing.
Yes.
Seeing that video for the first time. I'm like, everyone's kind of like bopping to the music, and yet somehow they can morph into all these different skin tones and genders, and it's all about, we're all the same. Multiple looks and feels and colors and stuff like that. Because that was early 90s, wasn't it?
That was 91. That was 1991.
91.
And in the same year, that's when Terminator 2 came out. And Star Trek VI, the Undiscovered Country, which also used morphing technology, when you had Iman, right? I think that was her name.
Mm-hmm. David Bowie's... I don't think they ever got married, right? Just David Bowie's girlfriend?
Right. I don't think so. On this list, it also says that the one of the first movies after that to really use the whole idea of this type of morphing transition was in The Line of Fire, which was the Clint Eastwood, you know, movie where he played the Secret Service agent. I'm trying to think of when they morphed him. I don't remember there being anyone getting morphed in that movie, unless maybe morphing from, you know, how he looked in 63 to 93 or something like that. I don't know.
Maybe. I'd look at that again. I'd have to rewatch it. Yep.
Yeah. And then the TV show Star Trek Deep Space Nine had a character, Odo, who constantly was morphing. So they used a lot of technology there. You have the music video of Snoop Dogg of Who Am I, where he and others keep morphing into different types of dogs and things like that. The official name of the of morphing technology it's called spatially warped cross dissolve.
Okay, spatially warped cross dissolve. Okay.
Yeah. That's the I guess technical term for the whole thing. Don't know. And as you mentioned today, nowadays, things are a little more complex with the way they do it, and the technology has gotten so amazing in the last 35 years that there's so many. It's probably a lot cheaper to do nowadays, also.
Well, it depends on what you want to do, but yeah.
Right.
I just got done watching season 2 of Light and Magic on Disney Plus, which is about, you know, the evolution of the special effects industrial light and magic business. And they did a couple of episodes on the facial technology to make Captain Davy Jones for the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, with all the moving tentacles and everything, and how all the actors had to have all these dots on their faces, literally acting with these dots that could be tracked, so that way the computer would know where to put all the tentacles.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, all that stuff is always fascinating to watch those behind the scenes documentaries that explain those type of stuff. And then the camera basically at this point, goes around the older Ryan to give us, first of all, a shot of the large number of headstones that are here, most of them crosses. You know, there is a Star of David right next to Miller's grave, which always makes me wonder if that's supposed to be the grave of Mellish or not. Could be not. We'll never know. It's just, you know, they did bury the soldiers based on their date of death, so you know it would sort of make sense in this fictionalized universe that it's possible that Mellish is there next to him. Is Mellish the last? No, because Mike died after Mellish. So, all right. It's somewhere around there. Who knows? And then, so it gives us a shot that we're looking from behind Ryan at everything that's going on. And then the shot changes again, and we see we're basically behind the headstone looking at the older Ryan looking towards us and getting ready to talk to us and stuff like that. We see his family in the background. And there's something that's always bothered me ever since I first saw this movie. I don't know if you remember this, but at the very beginning of this movie, when they're starting with these scenes, he actually falls down and his family runs up to him. And that doesn't happen here.
Oh my God, you're right.
And like, I searched IMDb and it doesn't mention that as a goof or anything like that. Like, I can't be the only person who's noticed this. There's something a little strange.
Never thought about that. The fact that when he stumbles upon seeing the graves, his family rushes to him. You're absolutely right. And then now it's almost like they went back to the idea of, let's just give, you know, grandpa or give my husband space.
That's right. I mean, in the next day or two, you know, his wife will come up to him, but up until now, no. And I think his like son runs to him at the beginning of the movie. So it's like, whoa, what the hell is going on here? Like again, it can't be that I'm the only person who noticed this. Something doesn't make any sense.
Holy crap. You know, and I'm usually really good at picking continuity errors, but because it's so much happens between the very beginning and the very end. Wow, dude. What good catch. Because you're absolutely right. There's no explanation for why he would have gone to one knee. And then what are we missing? Did he go to one knee when he turned the corner And then there was a scene where he said, wait, sorry, give me a minute. And then they let him walk by himself because we don't have that. We just.
That's right. Okay. So in minute three of the movie, he's walking across the field, mm-hmm. you know, of all the graves, looking for the proper grave of Miller. And, you know, you see that his family is relatively close. And then when he gets to the grave, he falls down and mm-hmm. everyone runs over to him. You know, his wife runs over to him and his son and his daughter-in-law and the grandchildren are nearby. And then they show us all the gravestones. And then, you know, at that point, it zooms in on him. You know, when he looks up and he's sort of crying and everyone's around him. And that's when they give us the fake, you know, transition from, you know, at the beginning of the movie. So it's the only possibility is that maybe he's now, you know, gotten his composure back. And so therefore, you know, it's not as if this is something that happened right afterwards. You know, maybe it's not a continuity error. Maybe now he's figured out his problem and has now, you know, composed himself. And then he's just standing there. So, okay. I sort of give him an out on this one, but everyone is really far away. Let's put it that way. They really gave him his space. mm-hmm. He's like, I'm okay. Everyone 50 yards back. You know, I don't know. So it's a little strange.
I want to go back and watch because you and I talked about that very minute because I wanted to be at the beginning when they made the transition and I wanted to be at the end when they come back.
Yeah.
There is no explanation for it. Zero.
Nope. None whatsoever. Again, except for what I said. And then he kneels down again and nobody runs to him. Yeah, at this point, they're like, all right, false alarm. We're not going. We'll stay there this time. Last time was enough. I don't know. It's very strange. Very strange. Very strange that there's no acknowledgement of it.
There's gotta, I have to imagine that at some point there was something edited out that Spielberg realized, okay, we're already at the end. We don't need to drag this out any longer. Let's just show him at the actual, you know, walking by himself again. There's got to be something missing. I'm curious what.
See, that's what I'm here for, to add to your curiosity.
Well done, sir. You've done a man's job, sir.
There you go. And you know, then we get the last few words of this minute, or he says, "My family." You know, he's telling Miller something about his family, but people will have to come back tomorrow with a new guest to find out what he wants to say about his family. I don't know. It's a little maybe he's got a little secret about his family. My family thinks that I didn't earn this. You know, I don't know. It's possible.
I am going to have to rewatch the beginning. And then these very minutes that you and I have been covering before the movie comes to an end. I cannot believe this.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it.
That's bananas, dude.
Yep. I agree.
It doesn't make any sense. Unless he goes to one knee at the beginning and then we've backed up. And we've caught him before he goes to his knee?
No, but he will kneel. He kneels down at the end of this. At this minute, he kneels down.
Yeah, but I'm talking about from the beginning of the movie.
In the beginning of the movie, he basically, it looks like he stumbles or whatever. But it happens to, it has to happen before what we're watching here. Because, you know, over the next few minutes, I'll get to it with, you know, with my next guest. But he will be, you know, joined by his wife and he'll be talking about Miller and all that stuff. So, you know, there's no other place where that could fit in unless, again, we go back to, you know, this story that I've made up that he fell, everyone ran over to him and then he told them to get away and, you know, stand back far away. And it's the only explanation I can think of. But I personally just believe that it's just a different shot that they decided to go with here, and that's it.
It's man, that's maddening.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, because everyone came over to him. He was crying. He was looking straight down. His son hugs him. His wife's on his other shoulder. I mean, how in the world do we get him by himself again?
That's right. And why would they leave him at that point? You know, that would have been the perfect point for Spielberg to then have them say to him, okay, Dad, who is John Miller? You know, tell us the story.
Well, except, you know, that would give away the fact that I think Spielberg wanted us to think the whole time.
I'm aware of that. No, but maybe they could have added that dialogue here at this point, you know, that here, you know, they say to him, who was John Miller? And then he says to him, well, John Miller was this guy who, you know, in the last few seconds, I just had my whole life flash in front of me. But here, now I will tell you what happened over the last 2 hours and 40 minutes, you know, since
well, I don't know. The thing that's crazy, dude, is the framing isn't even the same. If you go back, which I just did, thankfully, you've got all of these minutes digitized. I went back and looked. The framing is even totally different. It's like they decided to set up in front of a different part of the cemetery for the end of the movie versus the scene where he collapses.
That's right.
So the only explanation is they filmed something, or Spielberg just decided, what does it matter at this point? Which he's famous for saying that. Where he gets back up, tells his family, I'm sorry, I was overwhelmed, give me a minute, and then walks away, which makes no sense because it would just ruin the movie.
Yes.
I honestly think this is that famous quote that he did during Indiana Jones or you know, the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because someone had said, you know, we're filming the exact same hallway or alleyways just because we filmed it from a different angle. It's the same alleyway. And Spielberg goes, if at this point in the movie the audience is paying attention to that, then I lost them a long time ago. And I think this is one of those cases where the last thing we remember, they were in the cemetery. What does it matter that it doesn't match exactly from when we were like an hour or 2 hours, 2.5 hours ago?
Because 28 years from now, Movie Rob Minute and all of his guests will be going through this movie and they will be the first people to actually verbalize the fact that, wait a second, these scenes don't match up.
Not at all. No, even the framing is completely different. If you match up the shot with what looks like in the background and where the family is and everything, it doesn't match, not even close. That's dude, thank you. You haven't ruined the movie. You've just made me go, I will be able to point this out for the rest of my life.
There you go. That's, you see, it goes back to the whole idea of the stormtrooper helmet, you know, the stormtrooper.
Bonking his head.
It's one of those things, once you see it, you're never going to be able to unsee it.
No, in fact, my wife gets mad at me talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark. The scene, I don't know if you remember this, but if you go watch for it, the scene where he thinks Marion's dead and the camera's doing a push in on him, he's drinking in the bar, he's got the monkey on the table, and you see behind him is like an opening, there's kind of like an alleyway where hundreds of extras are all dressed up. And if you watch that scene to the far left, as you're looking at Harrison Ford, so over his right shoulder, you see a crew member in jeans and a t-shirt come walking through the scene.
Well, he decided he wanted to be in Cairo on that particular day.
He's forever immortalized in that scene.
That's right.
So,
that's very cool. All right. So, Alan, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
You know, it's one of those things where you always feel like you want to say one more thing because, you know, this is it. And then you're going to get mad if, you know, later you go, oh, I should have said. I'll just say this. It is my second favorite World War II movie. I think we went through and ranked them at some point. We didn't do it here.
I'm not going to be doing Patton.
Patton is my number one favorite. I will tell you, right in the heels of this, Hacksaw Ridge is one of my other favorites. Yes. And those are movies talking about Memorial Day weekend. Growing up. Let me just add it. I'll do this with my dad having.
Come on. Why is The Greatest Escape not on that list?
Yeah, it's not on my favorite. It's an okay movie. You know, if I'm going to watch a movie about escaping from prison, I'll go watch Chicken Run, which is basically the same movie.
No.
A happier ending.
I'm glad you're not coming back tomorrow.
But no, I'll say this. With my dad having been gone for 8 years now, I can thank him unintentionally. I know he didn't plan on it, for loving World War or loving war movies in general, but specifically World War II, because I remember growing up with only, you know, three VHF channels, maybe a fourth if you count PBS, and then a couple of UHF channels. One of the things that would happen on Memorial Day weekends is they would run war movies on almost all those channels. There would always be some special, some marathon of war movies, John Wayne movies or whatever. And so I grew up getting used to watching, oh, it's Memorial Day weekend, Dad's going to be watching war movies all weekend. And I would just sit and watch the movies with him. And I got introduced to everything from Tora, Tora, Tora to Midway to A Bridge Too Far to Patton and, you know, the Battle of the Bulge, Run Silent, Run Deep, PT-109. I mean, all of these war movies I just would watch with my dad. And now there's a sense of nostalgia. Saving Private Ryan, just sitting there and talking about a historical event, will always be connected with me being a kid sitting down watching movies with my dad. So in some ways, he was career military. So on this memorial, kind of this week has been the memorial lead up and weekend. I'll be remembering my dad always, but certainly it's a more fond memory, or at least a more poignant, whenever this holiday comes around.
Wow. You see, now we all will think of your father. So that makes sense too.
And we can even mock it a little bit because he retired as a colonel. So he literally was Colonel Sanders.
Wow. You know what? That's very funny.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
That's right.
But that's a different movie.
No, that is a completely different movie. That is Spaceballs for anyone who didn't catch that reference. Yeah. All right.
Other than that, you know, one of the things I love about doing things like this, but also having made relationships like with you, is even though I do a daily political talk show, I do tend to pull in movie quotes or lines or because I think that helps us relate sometimes more to what's going on. Mm-hmm. Because you may want to put up a shield depending on your political beliefs, but all of a sudden if you say in the context of, remember when so-and-so said this, or remember when so-and-so was this in the movie, and you go, oh yeah, I think movies are a way to help us maybe relate and maybe understand things that we didn't have to necessarily experience. And so I love this exercise of looking at a movie 1 minute at a time. And I just say, thank you for inviting me on yet another one of your journeys.
And thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, even though you and I have a hell of a time scheduling. Yeah, you know, that's something that's gone back many, many seasons, but you know, we figure it out eventually. Yeah. You know.
I will look forward to the day where I have nothing to do with my day. And until
wait
then,
a second. You're saying this is considered doing nothing? Oh, come on.
No. I mean,
in your day,
I'm talking about, it's so hard to schedule me because I wish I had nothing to do other than talk movies all day. I'd love to do that all day.
That's why you schedule it in.
I do try to fit it in. Dude, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. This has been a special treat. Simply, like I said, it's my second favorite World War II movie. And because of the meaning of the holiday and my dad, this has been fun.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And I thank you very much for all of your behind the scenes advice regarding this season and other seasons too. And also for joining me for, you know, more episodes than you probably deserve.
I would agree with that.
But I appreciate it. So it's always fun talking to you. So thank you very much, Alan. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, one last time, you can find me wherever you find your favorite podcast. Just do a search for The Alan Sanders Show. You can always reach out to me, thealansandershow@gmail.com, or on all the socials. Again, The Alan Sanders Show. You can just find me. Just put it in the search bar, and you'll find me.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, like I said, thank you once again, Alan, for joining me these last few days and at the beginning of the season, and I look forward to seeing you back next season. Maybe more than once. Who knows?
I'm very much looking forward to season 9. Thanks, buddy.
All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, earn this.
And I hope I have earned this. Solitude, you haunt me with reveries of days gone by.